friend or stranger and take them back later. On the other side of the situation is, I'm stressed because my boss is too cheap to hire another barista, and now this woman is glaring at me. When I'm stressed, I make more mistakes with the order and have to start over. My boss is such an idiot. Let's see how stressed she is when I quit. Somehow we manage to believe our stress is more important than that of everyone around us. The truth is, we use stress as a way to express in desperation, I'm important. And this in turn becomes an excuse for poor behavior. This is the opposite of taking responsibility. For a fun little exercise, imagine that every time you feel stressed and act out because of it, that every single person you affected due to your stress is now just as stressed as you for reasons that are just as important as yours. Imagine this chain reaction throughout the world. Is this going to create the utopia of your dreams? In other words, we need a collective message. Enough. The beginner's tool is to learn to take responsibility and learn to break down the habit of stress. The advanced tool is to know that none of the stress is real anyway. The truth is, giving into the stress habit further separates us from who we really are. It activates our limb topics and lends itself to behavior that's far below our best selves. While the natural stress response to an actual threat may be useful every now and again, experiencing constant stress simply because our brain is used to doing so makes for an uglier world than we need to live in. What about anxiety? For anyone who has ever experienced an anxiety or panic attack, you already know they're outright debilitating and certainly don't feel like a choice. Luckily, they can be reversed by using hypnotherapy. Then the less you have them, the less likely you are to worry about having one, and the less likely you are to have one at all. Luckily, all hypnosis helps to decrease stress and anxiety because that is the very act of accessing the theta state, feeling safe and relaxed. To decrease your stress and anxiety quickly, I recommend going back to the self-hypnosis process from Chapter 1 and practicing it or listening to it at www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com back-to-back two or three times in a row. This will have a wonderfully compounding effect, and you'll feel as if you had a mini vacation in no time at all. Root topics. Lack of self-confidence. Lack of self-confidence reveals itself through many different limb topics. Our career, relationships, sense of style, even the music we listen to or don't listen to, can be a reflection of our self-confidence. The beautiful thing about root topics is that they are a two-way street. If you were to go to Toastmasters, a group devoted to helping people learn to speak in public, to learn how to give a better speech, it might solve a fear of public speaking, but it wouldn't necessarily cure the root topic of lack of self-confidence. This would be chopping off a limb, but with the root topic still intact, another branch could very well grow in its place. If you were to simply fix the root topic of self-confidence during hypnotherapy, but then never give a speech for the rest of your life, the public speaking limb might never fully heal. The sweet spot is when you take the time to heal the root topic on the subconscious level, while also taking tangible action on the conscious level. For example, combining hypnotherapy for lack of self-confidence with the experience of practicing public speaking on a regular basis at Toastmasters. In my experience, lack of self-confidence stems from a few key events in childhood that blew themselves out of proportion. For me, it was T-ball. I was so nervous waiting in line to hit the ball, I got up to bat and kept hitting the stick the ball was on. I heard a few people laugh, and that was it. The I can't do it, I'm not good at sports, I hate sports mantras began. I wonder what would have happened if I had somehow hit the ball out of the park. What would have happened if my first experience with sports had been an overwhelmingly positive one? My gym class experiences may have been very different for the next decade. So while my self-confidence in sports was destroyed right out the gate, I didn't really care. I may not have developed a love of sports because I was embarrassed so early on, or I genuinely may not have cared enough in the first place to do a good job. We may never know because I don't feel the drive to improve that area of my life. The unfortunate thing is I also came to, quote-unquote, hate anything that looked at all like a sport. The idea of participating in a relay race or a game of charades makes me so nervous I can't even tell you. A group setting where other people depend on you to do well is not my jam. Whether it's extremely serious or ridiculous and playful, I'm out. Quote, I can't do it. I'm not good at it. I'll just let you down. End quote. So although my rendezvous with sports may not have had any truly crushing impact on my life on the surface, that lack of self-confidence is insidious. I know that the fear of playing sports was the cousin to my fear of singing in public, and singing was something I loved from the start. I also didn't have any innate talent or singing ability when I was young. In fact, in a hypnosis session early on, I remembered a family member saying, "Who killed the cat?" when I was belting out a tune at around the age of 8. It was meant to be a joke because I was probably way out of tune. The person who said it had never wanted to be a singer and couldn't imagine I would either, but I did. During my first session to overcome my fear of singing, I remembered that moment and my little heart was crushed. It felt just like I did when I couldn't hit the tee ball. Our subconscious mind lumps things together. Bad experiences over here, good experiences over there. Then it directs the conscious mind to go for more of the good, safe experiences and steer clear of the bad experiences. So what happens when the bad experience is something you love or something that's a requirement for you to advance at your job, like public speaking or flying? The point is that lack of self-confidence about anything colors our self-confidence about everything. I may never choose to play sports, but my avoidance of them and all public forms of playing has drained a lot of color from my life that could have been there. Here's an exercise you can complete to see what kinds of connections your subconscious is making without your permission. Think about things you just don't like to do and jot them down on a piece of paper. Circle any of those where you remember having had a bad or embarrassing experience as a child. Ask yourself, could this experience have anything to do with why you don't like the other items on the list? In what ways has the avoidance of each of these items impacted your life? This audiobook is called Close Your Eyes, Get Free because freedom is paramount. The freedom to play along with a silly game without being mortified the entire time. Or the freedom to say no thanks with a smile on your face and mean it just because you don't want to, not because you're afraid to. Freedom comes when all options are available to us, when we're not limited to a few behaviors that happen to feel comfy. You don't have to want to do everything, but believing there is anything you can't do or aren't good at is a limitation that we simply don't need to have in life. While all of the self-hypnosis processes throughout this audiobook will certainly lend a hand to increasing your self-confidence, you can also log into www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com and access a sample hypnosis recording all about this fundamental topic. Lack of self-worth. Lack of self-worth as a root topic often manifests itself in limb topics that are relationship-based. Lack of self-worth can also play into things like overeating and procrastination, but that usually takes a little bit of digging to get to, whereas lack of self-worth is always a common denominator when someone stays in an unhealthy relationship. Many of us listening to this live in a society where we're told we're capable of anything, that everything we do is fabulous, for example, participation trophies, but simultaneously we're told not to be full of ourselves and not to brag or gloat. The idea of authentic self-worth gets mucked up in this confusion. How can I believe I'm smart, beautiful, and capable when believing that would be narcissistic? How can I know there's someone out there in the world who would treat me better than this, who wouldn't put me down or lie to me or hurt me? What if this is the best I'd ever get? Isn't this pain better than the fear of the unknown or, God forbid, being alone? Self-worth comes from knowing you're just as good as everyone else, yet no better. This is such an anti-millennial philosophy that it's a challenge for me to wrap my head around it sometimes, and I've been teaching these concepts to my students for years. While I was growing up, the predominant messages I heard were hard at work telling me how special I was, but don't brag. You can do anything, but stop being egomaniacal. You were born to be a leader, but don't be bossy. Everything we learn growing up in school is by comparison. They got a 98 on the exam and you got an 86. They're smarter than you. You ran the mile in 5 minutes and they ran it in 7 minutes. You're a better athlete. He makes $50,000 a year and she makes $300,000 a year. The latter is quote-unquote successful. Take a deep breath and consider what it means to be just as good as everyone else and no better. It means you are just as worthy of happiness as everyone else. By knowing this to be true, it doesn't limit us. It doesn't automatically give the promotion to the other guy, because even though everyone is just as good, worthy, and deserving as everyone else, only some people will do what it takes to get there. Competition can be a force for bringing our best to the table, and it can create an atmosphere where the most creative solutions are produced. But far too often, it looks a lot more like a situation where there is always either a winner or a loser. Our subconscious mind, in an attempt to keep us safe, will either have to put the other people down to defend the belief that we deserve to have more than them, or it will cause us to put ourselves down so that we never enter into the arena. Either way, it's a lose-lose situation. But the truth is, you are worthy whether you win or lose. A lot of people have a conscious fear that if they actually believe that they're worthy no matter what, that they simply won't act, that somehow the lack of self-worth is a powerful motivator. To the contrary, I found that my clients act infinitely more when their self-worth has improved. They believe they're worthy whether they win or lose, so the only quote-unquote failure would be to not try for something they truly want. If they get it, great. If they don't, they learned something and it was still a worthwhile experience. Lack of self-love. Both lack of self-confidence and lack of self-worth are derivatives of lack of self-love. If you loved yourself completely, you would naturally believe in yourself, take care of yourself, and be kind to others because there would be no perceived threat. If we had self-love, the nail-biting phobias, insomnia, weight, and neuroses would melt away because the conduit trunk topics of anxiety, stress, and negative self-talk would cease to exist. I realize this can all sound very woo-woo to anyone new to the topic, but truthfully, self-love couldn't be more practical for whoever wants to live their best life as the best version of themselves. For example, let's say you have a fluffy golden retriever puppy with big paws and a goofy smile. His name is Sam, and you love this fur baby. Sammy can do no wrong. He may rip your shoes to shreds and more or less destroy the house in various ways, but after a moment of scolding or the hiring of a trainer, you go right back to loving Sam so much your heart could just burst. You want Sam to eat the very best food without grains or gross additives. You want to take Sam for walks simply because the pep in his step and the way he wags his tail out of the pure need to express his love for the same walk he's taken a million times before. You want Sam to be groomed by someone who loves him as much as you do. You hate leaving him even when you're going on a fabulous vacation, and you genuinely believe he's the best dog in the world. But that doesn't mean you hate every other dog on the planet and hope they suffer and never get to play. Heck no! You love other dogs too. You see their value, you see their cuteness, you love their unique personality, and you appreciate their people because you know they love their dogs as much as you love yours. Connection, love, appreciation. Here's an important exercise. For just one day, love yourself as much as you love your dog, or cat, or your favorite sports team, whatever floats your boat. Do what makes your tail wag. Feed yourself only the best out of love. Forgive and forget in the same instant. Go for the ball and wag your tail when you miss. Wag your tail when you catch it and take a nap because they're great. When you love Sam, you don't say, I love you so much, so eat garbage. We're not going for a walk and I don't care if you cry when I leave. Stop being such a baby. You can't do anything right. Quite the contrary. If anything, that love drives you to be the very best you can be for Sam. That's what happens when you experience self-love. You want the best for yourself because you know you're worthy of it and that others are worthy of it at the same time. We can get closer to self-love by peeling away the layers of conditioning, but self-love doesn't need to be created. It already exists in pure form. Recognize yourself for what you truly are. Perfect. If you want to boost your self-love starting today, return to the scripts found in the PDF that came with this program for self-worth in Chapter 2 and gratitude in Chapter 3. Next steps. Excellent. In this chapter, you learned a little bit about a lot of the most common topics within hypnotherapy, and you have completed the Breakthrough Procrastination Self-Hypnosis Process. Now go ahead and visit www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com to access this chapter's hypnosis recording. Sit back, relax, and close your eyes, get free. After you listen to the recording, please let me know how it went. Using the hashtag #closeyoureyesgetfree on Instagram or Twitter, message me at @GraceSmithTV your starting and ending numbers on the stress scale. Please also share with me the one root, trunk, or limb topic that will be most beneficial for you to overcome in your journey toward personal freedom. By using the hashtag, you'll get to see how other people are improving right alongside you, plus I will have an opportunity to cheer you on. Move on to Chapter 10, and keep a lookout for all of the wonderful benefits you're no doubt experiencing as a result of learning the power of hypnosis. Chapter 10. Serendipity. Colleen is a nurse. She has very fair skin, dirty blonde hair, and big green cat-like eyes. She works long hours on her feet. She holds hands with the dying, consoles family members, and cheers her patients on toward health. Over the years, as she became more confident in her work, and as medical advancements continued to improve drastically, Colleen was happy to notice that in general, her patients were staying healthier longer with fewer complications. Overall health was on the rise over those 30 years for nearly everyone, it seemed, except for her. While growing up, her mother had always scolded her, "You eat every meal like it's your last." No matter how much she had wanted to slow her pace or count her chews until she reached 50 before swallowing, she was always the first one done with her dinner. The difference was, while growing up, the food she ate was nutritious and well-balanced. Once she got to the hospital, it was a different story. It had started out as a harmless pattern. In the break room, there were always donuts, cookies, pies, and cupcakes. The patients' families would bake these treats to say thank you, and it would have been rude not to accept. When you work on a busy floor, as she always had, finding the time to eat can be a challenge. So Colleen found herself regularly running into the break room and eating quite a lot in a short period of time. At first, it didn't appear like binge eating, but over time, a simple equation formed in the mind. It comprised of a stressful environment, lack of time to eat, and lots of delicious temptation all in one place. Eventually, the habit of eating a lot very quickly followed her home. It started with a few extra pounds here or there, which a successful diet would wipe out at first. But in a short period of time, twice as many pounds would return. By the time Colleen was approaching retirement, she was extremely overweight. It had become very difficult for her to work. The extra weight combined with all those years of being on her feet had made her knees very weak. She was in pain, she was tired, and she was ashamed. She felt that while advocating for the health and well-being for her patients, they were all noting the result of her less than healthy food choices and portion sizes over the years. She loved her work, but she felt humiliated every day. To top it off, she was in need of double knee replacement surgery. However, due to her weight, the insurance companies would only cover a portion of the cost. The surgery would diminish her retirement account significantly. After all those years of service, she was terrified for her future. Reluctantly, Colleen sought the help of a hypnotherapist for weight loss. She had tried every fad exercise from barre to Bikram to beach bod. She had tried every fad diet from no meat to no gluten to only if it fell from a tree to everything wrapped in bacon. They all resulted in minimal short-term results and nothing long-lasting. She had tried traditional therapy, juice cleanses, and even acupuncture. For her very Western medicine-oriented mind, this was quite a stretch, but she was at her wit's end when she figured, I've tried everything else, so what do I have to lose? She arrived at the hypnotherapist's office 5 minutes early, sat down in the waiting room, and crossed her arms over her chest. As much as she wanted this to work, she felt as if she was almost insulting her medical peers by being there. If the letters MD and PhD couldn't help her, how the heck was a CHT, certified hypnotherapist, going to help? After a few minutes, an assistant welcomed her to the office. It was comfortable, not too big, not too small, with soft lighting, a big comfy recliner chair, a desk, two office chairs, some plants, and oh brother, crystals. What's next? Colleen thought to herself. A deck of tarot cards? In truth, Colleen was open-minded, but she was scared and so desperately wanted results that her nerves were shot. The cozy setting of this office was in such stark contrast to the sterilized fluorescent lighting she was used to that her body didn't know whether to relax or run. Despite her inner dialogue, she had to admit that the hypnotherapist seemed nice and knowledgeable enough as the session began. They discussed Colleen's weight loss goal, her history, and her expectations for the session. When they began, the hypnotherapist mentioned that they would be returning to the source of the issue to clear it up so that she could live a healthier life in the present moment. Even when we go backward, it's all in the service of the present, the hypnotherapist said. Colleen replied, Well, I know the source. It's the brownies back in the hospital break room. The hypnotherapist smiled and agreed that those brownies very well could be the source, but there may also be an earlier experience. Maybe, maybe not. Simply keep an open mind and we'll see what comes up. Colleen agreed but had no idea what she was about to learn. The beginning of the session started out, as was to be expected, with deep relaxation and a safe place. When the hypnotherapist told Colleen to return to the source of the binge eating, something fascinating occurred. All of a sudden, the nurse felt very, very hungry and very sad. She could tell she was still in the hypnotherapist's office, and she could still hear her voice, but she was also someplace else entirely. The hypnotherapist would ask questions about where Colleen was and what was happening, and the nurse would answer. Hypnotherapist, look down where your feet might be. Take your time. Then let me know what you notice. Colleen, I don't have shoes on. My feet are covered in dust and dirt. I'm a boy. I feel about 12 years old. Hypnotherapist, that's right. Your feet are covered in dust and dirt. You're 12 years old. Colleen, I have dark skin, very dark skin, darker than my brother. He just died. I'm so sad. I can't believe he's gone. Colleen starts crying hysterically. Hypnotherapist, in a soothing and understanding voice, that's right. Your brother just died, and you can't believe he's gone. What happened to him? Colleen, there wasn't any more food, and he died, just died. I could hear them talking, saying he would be next. I didn't want to believe it, but then, sobbing, I was carrying him. We were walking to find fresh water. He was looking at me, and then he was still looking at me, but he was gone. As the session continued, they learned that the 12-year-old boy lived in a village that had been attacked. All of their livestock had been killed, and many people were dying of starvation. Often, the youngest and oldest members of the family died first. The boy had lost his parents in the attacks, and his only remaining family, his little brother, was now gone. Later on in the session, the boy found a carcass of an animal and ate as if it were his last meal. It was. Colleen, I've been walking for 2 days since we found the zebra. I just saw myself fall down. I think I died. Yes, I died. Hypnotherapist. That's right. Where are you now in relation to your body? Colleen, I'm above it, looking down. Hypnotherapist. How do you feel? Colleen, free, happy to be free, but I miss my brother. The hypnotherapist and Colleen continue to do healing work around the details of the session. Finally, when the hypnotherapist counted Colleen back up and she emerged from the hypnosis, she said with tears in her eyes, I don't know what that was, but I still miss my brother, and I'm an only child. From that day forward, Colleen never ate another meal as if it were her last. What the heck is past life regression? You may be thinking, okay, Grace, I was with you through all of this, but really? Past life regression? Stick with me here. A past life regression is a way of accessing memories from past lives through the use of hypnosis. I believe the most interesting thing about past life regression is that you don't need to believe in them or in past lives at all to have this experience. In my mind, it's actually just as fascinating if past lives aren't actually real. It's pretty amazing that the mind could create such a detailed story about another life that we feel a deep emotional connection to and that we can actually heal from. I don't feel confident in saying that past lives are real or not because we can't know for sure. However, after conducting many past life regressions myself with clients, I tend to lean toward the idea that they are real. The experiences are just so vivid and powerful. That said, I've had plenty of clients who firmly believe it's all a construction of the mind and go on to heal from their past life regressions, PLRs, all the same. Either way, this is a fascinating and powerful experience that I highly recommend. Interestingly, spontaneous past life regressions can happen during purely clinical hypnotherapy sessions. This is well documented in both Journey of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton, more on how this book forever changed the course of my life in just a bit, and the popular book Many Lives, Many Masters by Dr. Brian Weiss. In my private practice, this has happened a few times, where the client comes to work with me on something rather basic and clinical, yet when I say return to the source, all of a sudden the details of their experience are clearly about another time in history, another location, and another person altogether. One of the most popular stories of past life regression is the story of Chase Bowman, a young American boy who had an intense phobia of loud noises and complained of pain in his wrist at a very young age. Under hypnosis, Chase recounted accurate and chilling details of being a Civil War soldier who fought in some of the most horrific battles and was shot in the wrist. There's also the story of Barbara Carlin, who at an early age had a fear of showers and men in uniform. She started having spontaneous memories at the age of 3, telling her parents that she was Anne Frank, who wasn't well known then because her diaries had not yet been published. These are two rather well-documented cases. Although lining up past life regression experiences with historical details to determine accuracy might be fascinating, it isn't why I'm interested in PLRs. For me, it's interesting because through these experiences, we have the capacity to heal and live more fully in the present moment. Over 1 billion people in the world are raised to believe in reincarnation, so these ideas are really only shocking and surprising to a segment of the world's population. To the rest, it's perfectly normal. For example, when I was living in Brazil, I attended a Spiritist church ceremony that has a lot of similarities to Catholicism in terms of the saints they pray to and a direct connection to Jesus, but Spiritists also believe in past lives. The entire concept of karma depends upon a belief in reincarnation, and bringing forth our karmic debt into our current lifetime. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism have the concepts of karma and rebirth built into the very foundation of their beliefs. Hypnosis is not the only way, but is certainly one of the most powerful ways to experience a past life regression. I want to congratulate you for making it this far. I can only imagine the wonderful benefits you're already experiencing from having given your time and energy to learning how to close your eyes and get free. At this point, you may be wondering about my journey and how I became a hypnotherapist. Let me be clear. There was never, ever a time in my life when I thought I would be writing this book. I didn't grow up wanting to sit in cozy rooms with Himalayan pink salt lamps and Reiki frequency music while speaking to people who have their eyes closed. My mother is an amazing physical therapist, so naturally, while choosing career paths, I never wanted to touch the word therapist of any kind with a 1,000-foot pole. In my mind, I took after my entrepreneurial father and was good at business, decent at the arts, and no good at all at helping others. Needless to say, this career came as a big surprise, and one that I'm now infinitely grateful for. My journey with hypnosis began when I had my own experience similar to that of Colleen, the nurse in our story. It was right after I hit rock bottom and booked my very first past life regression session as a result. My first experience with high levels of stress began when I started working as an account executive for one of the world's largest fundraising companies right after graduating from college in 2008. This was the peak of the financial recession, and working in fundraising at a time when thousands of people were losing their jobs and retirement funds created a precarious situation, to say the least. Even with my proven success with fundraising for Habitat for Humanity while in college, nothing prepared me for working on campaigns that were in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Each day, as soon as my eyes opened, I felt an immediate sense of dread. Every cell in my body was resisting the day ahead. My heart would race with fear with each phone call or chime of an email entering my inbox. I knew it would be one of my bosses following up on my numbers. The long days working in the trenches, so to speak, exacerbated the stress, not to mention I was philosophically opposed to just about everything about our client at the time. It just didn't feel right. My high hopes of truly making a difference through sophisticated, large-scale fundraising were quickly replaced by an overwhelming anxiety that I had never encountered. I had never felt more incongruent in my life and had never felt so disappointed in myself. At this point in my life, I hadn't learned any healthy coping skills for debilitating levels of stress, partially because I hadn't needed them, and partially because stress relief class isn't exactly an elective available in most high schools or colleges. The only wonderful part of this job was the friendships I made with the other young account executives. My method of managing my emotions was to party with my beloved coworkers after work, which often included excessive drinking. While most of my colleagues could manage their intake before I knew it, I could barely make it to early morning sales meetings without being completely hungover. There was one morning in particular when I literally had to crawl on hands and knees out of bed and down the steps of my apartment to my computer, sick with pain and worry about remembering my numbers. With a throbbing headache, I was in the fetal position for the entire call, and as soon as the call was over, I burst into tears. I was miserable. When I finally left that position, I had high hopes that my new job would result in a more congruent way of existence, but no such luck. Back in New York, my partying was only getting worse. I was underperforming at my new job. I was always sick from my rundown immune system. I had put on weight and looked puffy and tired, and my personal relationships were a constant rotation of drama and upset. Still, somehow I managed to convince myself that my drinking wasn't the problem. On one random evening in early December 2010, while watching a movie at my Lower East Side apartment with a friend, I found myself rummaging through the kitchen for a drink. Eventually, at the back of the refrigerator, I spotted a Mike's Hard Lemonade. I immediately opened it and took a sip. "Ugh, this is disgusting," I exclaimed, and then promptly continued drinking the yellow stuff. Why? because earlier that night I had had wine with dinner and I was never able to stop drinking once I started. Never in my life did I ever just have one drink. My friend, who was by no means a saint, gave me a concerned look and said, "Why would you need to drink when it's just the two of us watching a movie? I think you might have a problem. I really think you might be an alcoholic." For some reason, that message that day got through to me. I had heard it plenty of times before, and you'd think when an ex dumped me for being a complete idiot and breaking his trust in what seemed like 3 seconds into our awesome relationship, or when I broke my arm and couldn't exactly remember how, or when I called in sick to work for the billionth time knowing my job security was already on thin ice, that one of those moments would have done it. But no, it was this quiet night at home that finally got through. My friend gave me a hug and left. I kept drinking. After a few hours, the fact that I might actually have an issue had built up to a feverish crescendo in my mind. I was genuinely scared. Partying wasn't a part of my identity. As far as I was concerned, it was my identity. For years now, I had felt like a superhero when I would come home from work and, as if I was stepping into a phone booth, would rip off my professional clothes, throw on my hipster gear, and boldly head out to the bars, ready to accumulate, quote-unquote, epic stories. But now, during this quiet night alone in my apartment, it was dawning on me that alcohol, which I thought had been my superpower, might actually be my kryptonite. It was a terrifying truth to admit to myself. After a long, dramatic, and miraculous night, perhaps I'll tell that story in my next book, I quit drinking and drugging and have been sober since that day. During my first few months of sobriety, I had serendipitous encounters with strangers all over the city, people telling me about their years of sobriety without any prompting on my end. I'd be in line waiting for coffee, and the person next to me would strike up a conversation that led to a discussion about being sober. Another time, an unprompted conversation on the subway led to another sobriety conversation. It was as if all these angels were planted all over the city who would remind me that everything would be okay just when I needed to hear it most. One day, a cab driver started discussing his sobriety of 23 years out of the blue and suggested a book called Journey of Souls by Dr. Michael Newton. It's about finding one's purpose in life through past life regression. The driver shared that the book was fascinating and asked whether I believed in past lives. Without hesitation, I replied, "No." For some reason that I can't explain, I took his recommendation and read the book. My sobriety had humbled me, and I was now more open to trying anything and everything that could possibly help me. Even though I didn't necessarily believe in past lives or reincarnation, I was intrigued. Specifically, what resonated with me was the idea that before we were born, we chose our lives and all of the tough lessons we would learn while living it. Why would I choose to be an alcoholic and get sober at the age of 24? Was a question I wouldn't mind finding out the answer to. Before this cab ride, it had never occurred to me before that maybe I had chosen this experience for a reason. Maybe there was a path I couldn't quite see yet. Past life regression seemed to be a way to explore this foreign concept, so I made an appointment with Paul Arand at the Holistic Healing Center in New York to see whether my purpose could actually be revealed through a past life regression. As the session began, Paul spoke calmly and slowly, and before I knew it, I felt deeply relaxed as I did at the end of a yoga class while in Savasana. It wasn't a blackout. I knew where I was and could still feel the blanket. As he continued, I was guided back to my childhood. He asked me questions about where I was and what I was doing, and the answers I gave surprised me. These were things that I had not thought about for years, and some were things I didn't know that I knew. I was unaware of these memories. It was all very intriguing to me, and I couldn't explain why I was giving answers like these, but they felt powerful and deeply significant all the same. Some memories triggered happy tears, and even though I knew I could, I had no desire to wipe them away because my body was in such a state of relaxation that all vanity had melted away. Mascara must have been streaming down my face, but I just didn't care. I was so entrenched in what was going on in my mind. Next, we traveled back even further, and I found myself in Nepal. It was incredible. I've never been to Nepal in this lifetime, but I just knew I was there. What followed next was even more amazing. I won't share too many of the details here because that could fill another book in and of itself, but suffice it to say, by the end of the session, I felt I understood exactly why I had just been through the challenge of getting sober. My mind was blown. At the end of our 3-hour session, Paul was wonderful and supportive. As I was headed out of the office, he handed me a flyer saying, "I have a hypnotherapy training coming up if you're interested." I thought it was bizarre that he would mention this to me rather than just recommend follow-up sessions. Right away, I declined and told him I was in sales, not counseling, but I thanked him for offering. Why would I become a hypnotherapist? I thought the entire cab ride home. Needless to say, over the coming weeks, the idea of attending the training never left me. The training cost around $2,000, which I didn't have lying around to put toward a certification I didn't think I wanted. But a week before the training was about to begin, I received a bonus sales check for $1,998. The signs were getting less subtle. Luckily, I had a week's vacation, so I could take the hypnotherapy training course with Paul. I had just moved to Brooklyn and had to travel each day to Jersey City for the training. On the first day in class, it was clear I was the black sheep of the group. Everyone was either a healer, counselor, nurse, or in some other career designed to help people already. As we went around the room and introduced ourselves, sharing why we were there, I honestly answered, "I don't know why I'm here. I work in sales as an account executive for an online marketing company." My confusion didn't seem to bother anyone, nor did it bother me. In my gut, I knew there was a reason why I was there, but couldn't articulate it yet. As the class progressed throughout the week, I could physically feel a sensation, as if my forehead was expanding with information. All of the ideas about the subconscious mind, habits, and being in control of your thoughts were new to me, but I somehow simultaneously felt that I was being reminded of something I had always known. During the first hypnotherapy session that I conducted that week in class, I knew immediately that there was nothing I had ever done before that felt so natural. Immediately, all the right things came out of my mouth as I spoke to the fellow student who was standing in as my quote-unquote client, even though I had a long way to go in terms of becoming a proficient, certified hypnotherapist. I knew this was something that I had an innate talent for. That first week of class, I was partnered with another female student who wanted to focus her sessions on binge eating. We would work together for the week-long training and also eat meals together, which is where I watched her transform. I watched each day as her eating habits changed after having these sessions with me. It was absolutely amazing. The first hypnotherapy session I had ever done was with a student in that class, and she stopped binge eating. I realized that I had never actually made a tangible difference in someone's life to that degree, not until that week of hypnotherapy training. The fact that I had spent some time with a woman and had listened to her long enough to really hear her, that I was able to say things to her when she was in a relaxed and safe place that transformed her subconscious mind to the point where a habit that had plagued her entire life stopped? Well, I was hooked. Two additional transformative results came about around the same time that I was wrapping up this training and becoming certified as a hypnotherapist, which cemented my belief in how powerful hypnosis could be for an individual. First, up to that point, I remained strong in my sobriety from drugs and alcohol, and luckily still have to this day, but I had not been able to stop smoking. While in just 2 sessions with Paul, I quit smoking and have been a non-smoker ever since. Second, I had a fear of singing in public even though I was passionate about singing. This fear kept me off the stage and out of the public eye from the time I had graduated from high school until I was 25, 7 years later. Also, during my first certification training course, I was hypnotized to overcome my fear of public speaking and singing. Within a few weeks, I was the lead singer of an all-girl rock band, and I'm now paid thousands of dollars to speak to large audiences. I can't imagine what my life would be like today without these breakthroughs. My life had been truly transformed, yet I still hadn't fully embraced the idea of being a full-time hypnotherapist. I was still working at my job as an account executive and conducting sessions with friends, family, and a few word-of-mouth clients. Every single time I worked with someone, I was utterly amazed. It just wasn't getting old, and if anything, I was more astonished with every passing moment that the people I worked with were losing weight, overcoming their fear of flying, or healing relationships and falling in love for the first time in their life. I actually saw myself making the world a better place, and I saw people evolving into who they wanted to be. I saw the greatness they were capable of becoming. Despite the daily miracles I was witnessing, it wasn't until I experienced the opening story I shared with you in Chapter 1, my session with my future father-in-law, Alexandre, that I knew I had found my calling. As someone who had taken continuing education classes in human rights studies and had always dreamed of making a positive impact on humanity on a large scale, I realized this was the most profound and effective tool for personal transformation I had ever seen. The only problem was, no one understood it. And so, it was through a series of serendipitous events that I became a hypnotherapist, and I've been on a mission to make hypnosis mainstream ever since. Summary of a transformation. While I have hypnotherapy to thank for the vast majority of positive transformations and successes in my life, I would be remiss if I didn't discuss the two other components that continue to be equally as important in how I ended up here today. As this audiobook is about getting free, I feel it's important that you know the exact formula that resulted in the incredible life I live today. First, I got sober. Without this step, the hypnotherapy would not have been as effective, and honestly, I probably wouldn't have been open enough to try it in the first place. If you feel you may be struggling with an addiction, it doesn't have to be alcohol. I've provided you with some additional help in the resources section of the PDF that came along with this program. Please take a look and know that you are not alone. The next step in my transformation was, without a doubt, hypnotherapy. I continue to practice self-hypnosis on a daily basis, and I can't imagine my life without it. So many anxieties, fears, bad habits, and negative thoughts are now gone that I can hardly believe there was ever a time when I lived with them. The third and final piece was meeting my husband. My life blossomed when I met Bernardo. He is the greatest gift I've been given in this life, and yet, had I not gotten sober first, and cleaned up my subconscious mind next, I honestly don't believe we would have even met. The universe would never have brought us together simply because I wouldn't have been in a place to honor or nurture such a pure connection, and I don't believe he would have been interested in me in the state I used to operate from. Our frequencies would not have matched up. One beautiful step in the right direction led to the next and the next. This is what I want for you. A healthy body, a pristine subconscious mind, and all of the successes, including the gorgeous human connections that can flourish under those conditions. This brings us to our final self-hypnosis process. Self-hypnosis process. Eating right and weight loss. You can find the written version of the script in the PDF that comes with your program. I suggest reading through the directions two or three times so that you will easily remember what to do once you close your eyes and get free. While listening to the audio version, you can just close your eyes, sit back, and relax as you follow along. However, please never listen to hypnosis while driving. If you're driving right now, please skip ahead to the next chapter and come back to follow along with this self-hypnosis process once you're in a safe place. Also remember, video tutorials and audio recordings are available to you at www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com that will help you become a self-hypnosis pro in no time at all. Begin by making note of your starting stress level. 10 equals a full-blown panic attack, and 0 equals zero stress, no stress at all, the most relaxed a person can possibly be. Remember this number. Sit in a comfortable chair and place your feet on the ground, resting your hands gently in your lap. With your spine straight but comfortable and your eyes closed, take 4 deep, slow breaths, inhaling through your nose for 4 counts and exhaling through your nose for 8 counts. Let's begin. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In, 2, 3, 4. Out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. With your eyes still closed, imagine gentle roots growing from the bottom of your feet down into the center of the earth, grounding you. Good. Imagine a color you love flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots, down into the center of the earth. Flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots, down into the center of the earth. Bring all of your focus and awareness and attention to the palms of your hands. Perhaps you can feel your palms tingling. Perhaps you can feel your heartbeat in your hands. Perhaps you notice a sensation of expansion in your hands. Just notice and breathe for a few moments now while I am silent. Good. With your eyes still closed, repeat in your mind silently after me or out loud. 10. I am going deeper and deeper. 9. I am going deeper and deeper. 8. I am going deeper and deeper. 7. I am going deeper and deeper. 6. I am going deeper and deeper. 5. I am going deeper and deeper. 4. I am going deeper and deeper. 3. I am going deeper and deeper. 2. I am going deeper and deeper. 1. I am going deeper and deeper. This next step is optional. Feel free to follow along if you have the PDF that comes along with this program in your lap. If you don't, no problem and skip this step. Take a nice, deep, letting go breath. Open your eyes. Pick up this PDF and lift it in the air so that your eyes are reading at an upward diagonal angle. Simply find the line where a wall meets the ceiling in your home. That is approximately where you want the center of your PDF to be. This does not need to be exact. If you're looking up at a diagonal, you're doing this correctly. Read the following hypnoaffirmations at this upward diagonal angle until you have memorized them. Every day and every way, I'm losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Once you have memorized the hypnoaffirmations, put the PDF back down and rest your hands comfortably in your lap. With your eyes closed, repeat the affirmations you just memorized, either silently in your mind or out loud after me. Every day in every way, I'm losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body. Take another nice, deep, letting go breath and imagine all of your weight loss goals have already been achieved. See, feel, and experience yourself glowing with health and that you have more energy and feel more joy than ever before. Do this now while I am silent. Good. Now that you've spent a few moments imagining that you've already lost the weight from those parts of the body you desire to lose weight from, imagine the same color as before flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots into the center of the earth. Good. Put a gentle smile on your lips, open your eyes, stretch your arms over the top of your head, and say yes. Notice your new number on the scale. Remember, 0 is 0 stress, the most relaxed you can be, and congratulate yourself on how quickly you improved your state. Here is a simple summary of the process. Notice starting stress level from 0 to 10. Take 4 deep, slow breaths. Grow roots. Color. Notice your palms. Count down from 10 to 1, saying, I am going deeper and deeper after each number. Hold the PDF up at a diagonal. Repeat the hypnoaffirmations every day, in every way, I am losing weight and feeling great. I chew every bite until only liquid remains. Food is fuel. I only put the highest quality fuel into my body 10 times. Imagine you've already lost all of the weight you desire to lose and that you now have a healthy, glowing body. Smile while opening your eyes and say yes. Notice new number on the scale from 0 to 10. Congratulate yourself for improving your state so quickly.